From Los Angeles, California, here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, and other organizations for the purpose of improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. This seminar is entitled, How Do You Stop People From Upsetting You? Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about the movement.
You know, it's extremely difficult for a lot of people to understand workings of spirit, because some part of them likes to know there are spiritual things, and the other part of them that has never seen the spiritual things doesn't know about that. And so they like to encapsulate all the world in terms of what they know and put all the spirit in the same form. And yet everybody who is involved in spiritual work will tell you that to struggle with your mind in terms of spirit is to waste your time. How can that that is finite comprehend that that is infinite? How can it be done? How can you do that? If you have a method, would you please come now, right this moment, up to this microphone over here and tell me how to do that? I'll give pause while you do that. Well, if you're not going to do it, then I would suggest you don't struggle with your mind with what I'm going to tell you. Because you're just going to be proving the point that I'm wasting my time. And I don't care to waste my time, I don't care to waste your time in terms of physical level. In terms of the spiritual, there's no such thing, because it's always present. So it doesn't matter if we do anything or we don't do anything, and it doesn't matter whether you understand or you don't understand in terms of spirit. It matters to you in terms of your ego. But who wants to live your ego? And it matters to you in terms of your pride. And who wants to live that? I'm too busy living my own. And I hope you'd be too busy living your own so that you'd leave mine alone. And then we can move on to the next level. You see, we often feel that we have nothing to give spiritually. And we entertain then resentment against those people that do have something to give spiritually. But then we, in our minds, sit and we belittle them and pick on them and find all sorts of excuses to deny what they tell us, thinking that that denial is going to make something right, or that it will dismiss something. That's about as effective as getting a notice from the Internal Revenue Service that you're being audited and try to dismiss it mentally and see if it happens. All the time you've dismissed it, you're dying because you're afraid they're going to find out what you know they should find out if they're doing a good job. And that hurts. But after all, you're the one that did it. And so in that last moment, you then cry out to God to intercede for you and make all your errors right, and to then justify your eternal ignorance and make it all correct upon the whim of now you're being audited. And prior to that, you would hope that God wouldn't know about it so you could get away with it. How do you work with people who do those type of things? Then they approach you in terms of the mind and say, I don't understand what you said. And I wished I could. These people are well on their way to a nervous breakdown and mental illness because that secret resentfulness is going to trip them up. Then they start making their decisions in life based upon other people's opinions. And since they can't really know what that other person is thinking, their decisions more often than not come up with error. Then they start feeling the fatigue of defeat. And they start to feel that no matter what they do, it's going to turn out wrong. And so again, they'll cry out to God to help. And they say, "Oh God, help me get over the nervousness." And God says, "Stop doing those things that make you nervous." And you say, "I don't want to do that. I want to continue doing the things that make me nervous, and I want you to knock out the nervousness." And God just ignores you. And then you try to get in a fight with God or one of the emissaries of spirit, and they look at you and laugh and go on about their business. And that just gives you more fuel to shoot. And you end up with nothing. Then you cry out, "There is no God," and think that makes it true. These type of people are by far better off in those places called custodial care. Being upset is an inferior way of handling the world. It doesn't make it right because you're freaking out or you're upset. It doesn't do it. And a lot of people don't like to hear that because they like to freak out, but they don't like the results of the freak out because it drives them crazy. And they say, "But I want my freedom to freak out." It's like then you get this that goes with it. They say, "But I don't want that." You say, "Fine, you don't have to have it." They say, "But why do I have it?" We say, "Because that goes with that." They say, "Well, I don't want to believe that." You say, "You don't have to believe that." They say, "Well, why do I have these problems?" We say, "Because that goes with that." And they say, "I hate you." You say, "Fine, it's not my idea that it goes with that. I just happen to see that it goes with that, and I told you. If you don't like that idea, tough. It's not my idea." And then they say, "I want freedom." And I say, "Good luck. Because you're not doing good management. And there's no way you're going to end up with anything other than upset and an inferior approach to your reality." How often can you see the truth manifested in front of you and grasp it and gain freedom? Or must you continually play the fool, reside in your ego, resist with your pride, and fall flat on your face and look dignified? It takes a great deal of talent and practice. And some of you are getting a lot of practice. And believe me, I admire you tremendously. My God, I was never able to do that. I always looked the fool. I always felt the fool. And when somebody described it, I knew who they were talking about. I didn't like to hear it. But if they said, "Gee, you sure were good at that," and I say, "Oh, Lord, what a liar. I know that I wasn't good at it. Sure, I'd like you to tell me I was. That'd be the nicest thing in the world to hear, but that's a lie." And so they tell you what you want to hear, and all along in your heart, you no longer believe them nor trust them. Because you know they're setting you up for the kill. And so you resent them for telling you how nice you are when you know how bad you are. Do you want them to tell you how bad you are? You couldn't take it. Why? You'd have to give up those things you're doing that you know are wrong. Who determines the wrong? You determine the wrong. Can I determine it for you? You bet your life I could determine it for you. And once I determine it for you, you're in it. And that's why I won't determine it for you. But I do determine it for myself. It's called integrity. That means oneness without a second nor a third. And to have that, you must have character. And to have character, you must have courage to look. And that courage is going to rip you every way. It will rip you every way. And the only thing that will be left after you get through is the pure, unadulterated form that you are, that you've been praying for, that you've been scheming for. All these existences, it can be presented to you if you will give up that would destroy you. It's too hard. I'd have to give up my bad habits. I'd have to give up my secret resentments. I'd have to give up the idea that you don't know what you're talking about. Well, whoever said I knew what I was talking about? I just know the truth. Very frankly, that's all I care to know. And I'll let everybody else handle everything else because I'm very, very poor at it. I just have a hard time living fantasy and illusion. It's so difficult. Then they say the truth will set you free. Oh, maybe. If I could possibly just stay in my little cubicle where I live and not come out in this cold world, I might feel free. But in the physical body, there are restrictions. I know you don't like them. You came here thinking you'd be God, and so did 4 billion other people. So good luck. How do we handle then all of these disturbances? Endless patience. You say, not me. I'm going to get in there and I'm going to tell them a thing or two. Tell them 15 or 20 things. They're not going to pay attention to that either. They're not going to be listening to you. They want to be listening to what they have to tell themselves and their mind. And then they hear their mind speak something to them that they've never heard before, as far as they know. And they say, I now have the message of God. And out comes false doctrine. Before you ever say it, try it out on yourself first to see if it works. And then if it works, the only way you can pass it on is, look, I heard this, I tried it, it worked for me. Let me tell you, you see if it works for you. And they say, is it the truth? Say, work it and see. That's how we come to truth. Not by declaring truth do we come to truth. Not by declaring an end do we come to an end. The end declares itself when you come to it. People have come to me and they say, well, I feel my work is over on this planet. I say, then die. They look at me like, what kind of an idiot are you? God's idiot. Then what do we do? Your work is not over here until you die from the planet. You may just be stopping various facets of your work to go on to something else, but it's not over until the end is there, and it will tell you. You don't have to tell it. It knows. You're just waiting to find out when that is. And so you very impatiently wait for the end, and when it gets there, you say, not yet. I don't want to go. Allowing people to upset you causes sex problems, family problems, drinking problems, social problems, nervousness, tension, guilt. I could list a lot of them. So how do you stop having people upset you? You upset them first.
Oh,
But how do you do that? Ah, there is a key. To upset them first, your main line of defense is to remain calm and patient, and they'll freak out. And all you have to do is sit there and watch them. That's how you upset them first, by you not getting upset. And if they're as smart as they like to think they are, they're going to be learning from you how you handle them. And then when they remain calm, you're going to say, I'll remain calm right with them. And that's called communication. That's called cooperation. That gives everyone a chance to be involved in the winning process. Nobody can win. Why? Not till the end is there. You may win a segment and lose a whole tremendous amount later on. You see, the thing that happens is when you're unmoved by your enemy, it upsets them. Somebody come on you and start telling you a thing or two. I remember once a person who was a great authority, called a policeman, was telling me something about my driving habits. He pulled me over to tell me about it. And he wanted to know things like, where did I get my driver's license? And I told him where I got it. And he wanted to know how I got it. And I told him how I got it. And he wanted to know where I learned to drive. And I told him that. And by this time, the guy was fuming. And I said, you sure get hot under the collar easy, don't you? And he just looked at me, and he started laughing. Hand me back my license. I put up my wallet. Put it in my pocket. Watched him as he walked away shaking his head. But believe me, I improved my driving record rapidly. Because if you don't learn from the confrontation, regardless of how it comes out, you're an idiot. It's called stupid. It's called dumb. And so you declare your wrongness, like, yep, I was wrong. The guy did me a favor. He pulled me over and called me a lunatic, said I was driving like a madman. Didn't realize that I must be a good driver. I would have killed everybody. That I gave to myself later on down the road. If I'd have gave it to me in front of him, he'd give me the ticket to go along with it. You remain calm in the midst of adversity. Or you have to eat it. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You always have to eat it if you declare war in the presence of your enemies. So you keep your mouth shut. One of the easiest things to do is that. One of the hardest things to do is that. But who declares most of your trouble for you? Your mouth. Hasn't it been that way? When we shut up, well, they can get us. There is a way. I did it once with one of my staff members. We were doing something. I said, shut up. They said, I didn't say anything. I said, but you were going to. There is always a way to get somebody, if you really want to. And all they had to do was sit and say, all right. You lose immediately because why? The presence of spirit there demonstrates itself to you. And if you don't have the wit to see it, it's too bad. When we're under the spell of emotions, we get into arguments, fights, and family feuds. We rarely do that when we're not under the spell of emotions. And we're usually under the spell of emotions when we want something from them by way of proving a point, getting their body, getting their money, getting their car, proving a point, never accepting their point, or thinking they're going to manipulate us before they do. And so obviously the thing to do is freak out ahead of them and take up all the space so there's no room for them to freak. You win by occupancy. But believe me, the price you have to pay the landlord is terrible, because they hold that over your head from now on. I can't talk to you, you freak out. Every time I say something to you, you go crazy. I don't want to talk to you. Get away from me. It's like, but you're the thing I'm after. Why do I want you to get away? I freak out because I want you to know I'm here. It's like, well, there are a lot of ways to let me know you're here other than disturbing me. So we say, how? Leave me alone. But I love you. I can't leave you alone. Do it. I can't. I've got to torment you. It's called karma. It's dumb. It's stupid. Then you say, why? And you say, I can't help myself. And the moment you entertain an excuse in your mind, you lie. The very moment you say, I can't help myself, is when you fall. You may say, I'm having a difficult time finding the right excuse for you. And they're going to probably smile and say, any excuse will do. I say, well, I just love you. That's the best excuse of all. Don't want you to tell me that you hate me. The mere presence of excuse in your mind says your actions are not your own and you have to apologize for them, and you're wrong. Have you ever noticed that? Whenever you go out of your actions for somebody else and you start making excuses like, well, I didn't really mean to do that, and you fall apart. It's very undignified to be holy and spiritual and fall apart. But what have those got to do with each other? Nothing. So we again come back to, well, why are you doing it? To please you. Don't please me. I will please myself. I know what I want. You just think you know what I want. I know. I'll supply it myself. Don't give me a present. Give me money. I'll buy my own present. But isn't that the truth? They buy you a present. Oh, what a wonderful present. I got to go exchange it. And I can't let them know that I got to go exchange it. How am I going to do this and be justified? And tell them, don't give you a present. Oh, no, I want the present. What is it? Greed? Yeah. Okay. But you see, as soon as you own up to it, it's yours. And even though it may be a spirit of wrong, as soon as you claim it and you say, yeah, people, they let it go. They say, okay, at least we know that. And when they let it go, you let it go. And you say it was greed, but I'm going to give it to somebody because I do not need it. And you get very free. But if you say, no, I don't have greed, it's like, why are you excusing it? Why are you making an excuse? Why are you lying? Don't you call me a liar. I'm not. You're calling yourself a liar. I'm just telling you what you're doing. Who gave you a right to tell me what I'm doing? Nobody. I took it. Isn't that what we always do to people we love? We take it. We take advantage. We take this. We take that. What do we give? Nothing. I'm a taker. I never said I'd give anything in this relationship. I said I would take. And so I'm taking. Then take yourself out of here. No, I love you. I must stay. It may be funny, but these situations do abound, don't they? Of course, I bring you all here. You probably wonder why you're here. Not to hurt your feelings. So I tell you things in the spirit of humor, but I tell you the truth. And if you can get a little humor going, you will look at the truth in yourself. And that looking allows you that moment to gain freedom. Take it. It's so important that you take it. If you get a moment of joy, of happiness, take it. It doesn't come around that often. If you get a moment of contentment, live in it. Because there are people around who won't want you to do that. They'll think you should suffer for their sake. Let them suffer for their own sake. People try to get me to suffer, and I say, what do you want me to do, bleed? They say, yeah. I say, I am inside. I bleed in these veins, these arteries. They think, well, that's not bleeding. You decide your way, and I'll decide my way. You want a show of blood, bleeding? You bleed yourself. I got mine going the way I like it that way. Why should I give it up for your falderol? Because you're going to give that up in a minute anyway. So here I'm bleeding, and you're down the street with somebody who's not a bloody mess. And what have I gained by that? Nothing. What have you gained by that? Nothing. So why do it? That's important. Beirish Beisham.
John Rogers' closing words were Beirush Beishan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.